This show is sponsored by Qualitest. Deploy software that you and your customers trust with Qualitest Testing and Business Assurance Services. Learn more about Qualitest at qualitestgroup.com. Welcome to The Testing Show. I'm Michael Larson, your show producer, and today we are joined by Perzi Ababa.
Hello, everyone.
Matt Heuser.
Good morning.
And our special guest, Abby Bangzer. Abby, could you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, everyone. Abby Bangzer, and I am a tester at ThoughtWorks and have been with ThoughtWorks for about 5 years now, based in the Chicago office for the majority of time, but also worked out of Pune, India, and I'm actually now in London, UK, kind of a tester on the ground with our clients, helping them work better with testers co-located and looking at quality from a different perspective.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you for joining us today. Matt, this is your show. Want to take it over?
Sure. Thanks, Michael. So we always start out with a news segment. And what's been happening to me that I am most interested in is all these Skype spam bots. For the past month or so, I've been getting people, they text me a link to a badu.com website. Has this been happening to anybody else?
Yeah, definitely. It's been happening to me quite frequently. Most frustrating was just this past weekend, my Weekend Testing America's account. We were setting up for a session and I was really excited because at first I thought, hey, I got a bunch of people looking to respond for it. And it turns out that 15 of them were not responses. They were these spam links and just rather irritating having to go through all of them and go, nope, 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 nope. And in the middle of sessions, of course, getting ring ups and having to deal with them and ignore them while I'm trying to run a session, which was a bit irritating too. You're not the only one.
So apparently in 2012, someone stole a bunch of Skype usernames and passwords. I don't think mine included. I don't know where the list came from. And then they are using them now. They log in, they go through all your contacts, and they send every contact this link. It's crazy. So we put a story to it. The internet's held together with duct tape and baling wire, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. We're not just looking at the fact that Skype has insecurities. It's also the fact that we're looking at the challenges of Skype interacting with and merging with Microsoft. You could have a Microsoft ID or think that you have a Microsoft ID with the username and password that you think is secure, but you had a Skype ID that you didn't either disable or turn off, and that's still open. And so your account is still available, even though you thought that you moved everything over to your Microsoft ID and password.
Yeah, I think that was the big kicker is that Skype kept in one of those Yagni or you ain't gonna need it features where they thought someone might still want to log in with just their Skype username and password instead of using the 2-auth Microsoft login. So they kept those username and passwords around even though they weren't visible anywhere to the end user. Sometimes the most dangerous stuff in your software is the stuff that you just didn't clean up because maybe one day it might be helpful.
Because of the integration that they made with Microsoft Single Sign-On, which pretty much also means anybody can use your Skype account to log in across your Microsoft properties, that's a little bit dubious.
Wait, you can use your Skype account to log into your Microsoft Live email?
Right, so you can pretty much use it as an alias and extend that across all of your Microsoft accounts.
That sounds terrible. That sounds really, really bad. Is there anything testing could have done about that?
If you're just testing for the functionality, we can confirm that it works a certain way. But then when you're looking at the actual integration and the actual usage and ways where you can introduce risk, then this should at least have been brought up to a product owner or whoever it is that makes these decisions. That's definitely risky, and it's another integration point that you have to deal with. I think, yes, if you've tested for this particular case, then you can bring it up to someone. But ultimately, if this particular case was ignored, then it's not really going to be effective whether you test as much as you can or not.
Yeah, it's almost backwards. The person that tested it would say, yes, you can log in with your old Skype account and you can log in with your Microsoft Live account. They both work. So they would confirm the presence of a feature. But there's this, we should build the ability to turn off the old Skype login. It's not just on Skype, it's across all Microsoft logins. That freaks me out. That's a problem.
I don't even think the ability to turn things off, but after you link your two accounts, that should be off by default. you can't extend two-factor authentication using the current Skype profile. So you want to switch into something that's more strict.
Somebody said that was a feature, though. Somebody said, no, we want that. Some product manager said, no, you need to be able to continue to use your... I can even guess why it was. It was because people that use the Skype desktop client that automatically log in want to just keep automatically logging in.
Yep, that's me. I'm one of those people. I have never integrated my Skype ID with Microsoft. So it is still, I just use the desktop right. client. I use my ID for it. It's got nothing to do with any type of a Microsoft account. For those who do have the dual account option right now, Microsoft does have a fix, but you basically need to update your Skype account, make sure that it's merged over at Microsoft's accounts page. And they've got steps for how to do it over at Microsoft. We'll include that in the show notes, just in case you happen to be somebody who's been hit by this. The idea is you'll be prompted to sign in and merge the accounts, which will create a Skype alias. And then if needs be, you can turn off the old one and then you don't have the problem anymore, according to Microsoft.
Yeah, but I want my stuff to just work and mine wasn't stolen, so I'm going to risk it. So if I suddenly Skype you with a link that makes no sense, you tell me and I'll take some action. I think that always speaks to the trade-off between convenience and security. We get the little pop-up, critical updates required on your computer. It's the end of the world if you don't update. And we click the do it overnight button. Tell me later. I'm busy. And I can't even tell the difference anymore on my Mac. It'll say critical updates and I'll shut everything down and update it. And it's Slack is updating. That happened yesterday. Really? You can't tell the difference?
Good points. If you happen to be concerned out there, go check with Microsoft, see your settings and update your password at the very least.
Yep. I'm really interested in how should testers be finding these things? How do we tell the product owner about them? Is that a way to demonstrate value? And how do we get past the kind of classical, no, you're a tester, that's a feature. These testers are asking these weird questions that don't really make any sense. They need to focus on the functional execution. And then a year later, we have this kind of black swan problem. Man, why didn't those testers tell us about that? We did. Man, you should have tried harder. To talk about that, specifically becoming effective in our role as testers, we brought Abby Bankser in. What's your title at ThoughtWorks, Abby? You're an analyst, right?
I'm a quality analyst is the way I define QA. Quality. But you might find other thought workers with different definitions at times.
Quality. So ThoughtWorks is an international consultancy that focuses on agile transformation. They do a lot of doing and building, and they hire really smart people who get things done. Dare I say it, usually younger people who have more time to really devote to their careers.
Yeah, I think that ThoughtWorks has been going through a bit of a transformation over the last 5 or so years, basically since I've been there, where we've really been partnering more with our clients now on the term kind of moving up the clock face. Instead of having people call us and say, we have an idea, come help us build it, and having people call us up and say, we have a problem that we need to solve. And then allowing for that partnership between the client and ThoughtWorks to work together and iterate through ideas, fast prototype stuff, and be able to solve those problems from the business perspective, leveraging technology rather than coming in and just solving a tech problem.
That makes a lot of sense. Going back to the reputation, 5 years ago, you were known for coming in and doing software delivery in a newer and incremental and fast fashion, and then helping the companies do it. And a big part of that was all sorts of innovation. Moving up to business innovation seems like a great next step for you. It's a reasonably large company. It is 500 people?
Globally, we're up to near 5,000, but North America would be closer to the 500 number.
Yeah, a lot of offshore growth in the past couple of years.
We clearly do have a presence in many different countries, but we actually have at least one office on every continent. It gives us a chance to be involved in a lot of really interesting technology in all sorts of areas.
Antarctica? You have an office in Antarctica?
All right, fine. You got me. I think we can maybe argue that one is a continent, though, maybe.
All of the populated continents besides penguins.
I can always trust you to keep me honest, Matt.
We're testers. I try not to let it inhibit social situations when I ask, oh, you really? And they're like, no, I didn't mean that. Of course not. It's social convention. Give me a break. When we first met, I think it was at CAST in 2014, and you were just about to head to India to help with the tester development program over there. ThoughtWorks has really not had much of a test discipline. They've had analysts and programmers, but there's a few here and there, but they've never really made it a practice. And I think that's changed. Tell us about that training program.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing training program, actually. We put a lot of energy into it, and I was actually trained through it myself when I first joined in 2012. It's called TWU, or ThoughtWorks University. All of our entry-level hires across all the different regions and all the different roles together to do a bit of hands-on learning with project work, as well as classroom and more targeted learning around some of the skills you might need to be successful. We take the time there to build networks of people that are going to be able to support us on our project teams. I'm still in touch with people from all over the world. When I need help, I know I can reach out. I think for a lot of people, it's learning how to interact across roles on a project team for the first time and maybe their experiences.
So what do they do in this program? How long is it? What's the curriculum look like?
The program is 5 weeks and covers three major aspects of working at ThoughtWorks. Obviously, we are consultants, so the ability to work with clients, the ability to speak openly and honestly, and sometimes deliver hard messages is a big part of being a trusted partner. We work through aspects of that. We also, as you were saying, Matt, are well known for delivering software in a high quality way. And so go through some of what that takes. What are some of the practices and processes that we have found success with around Agile? Yes, but also just around cross-role collaboration between the devs and QAs and BAs and all that. And what are the skills associated in each of those roles? As a tester, going through some heuristics and Oracle learning, as well as understanding automation and the pros and cons there, when to leverage it. And each role has its own specific learnings in those spaces. The third aspect is that ThoughtWorks has a strong focus on social and economic justice. And so we take advantage of bringing our entire entry-level group from around the world to India as a way to let people discuss topics that maybe they wouldn't have learned about in their own home countries and experience organizations in India that are doing fantastic work for women's and children's rights was the organization that I was able to attend when I was most recently there. We partner with a bunch of different organizations and give people some insight into how technology can help people from around the world as well.
Following up on that, that sounds really intriguing. So you had a choice of different programs and options that you could attend. What are some of the other ones that they had?
Yeah, so it's timing-wise when we're actually at that program. Sometimes for one session, which is 5 weeks, we'll go with a certain organization, and maybe the next session, that organization wouldn't be able to host us, and so we might go with a different organization. One of the things that we do is a research-oriented project where there's three or four different topics, and each of the groups of new hires work together to investigate that topic, as well as chat with people internal to the company that has experience with it. That's, I think, where it's quite interesting with the diversity of topics. We've done women in technology, which is one that I'm actually a person that people can interview as a part of their research. We also have done healthcare in India, access to the open internet. So it's a mix of topics from very social oriented to sometimes more in our own backyard of technology, but all impact people in a social way.
That is really cool, Abby. I just looked up ThoughtWorks mission, and the three areas that I've seen is pretty interesting for me, because in the company that I work for, we have what we call a credo, and essentially the things that we adhere to that really defines everything that we do within the company. Sure, we're a healthcare company that's trying to transition into a healthcare technology company, but at the end of it all, we care about our communities, we care about the people that work with our coworkers, we care about our customers. Because we care about all of these things, then we're hoping for a sustainable model to drive our business, which kind of aligns with what you guys have. And I really appreciate that you mentioned that as a driving factor as part of your training and as part of onboarding your new thought workers. That's really awesome to me.
Yeah, it's about that sustainability too. Our first pillar is the ability to have a sustainable business, because if we're not in business, we can't help anybody. Sometimes part of our learning is balance all those pieces. There are so many people and organizations that could use help from technologists and from thought workers. How do we balance that with making sure that we stay viable enough to be there to help them? Those research projects that the new hires do are not just, hey, research into this topic. they're actually posing a problem that they have to solve. The one I know the best is the women in tech. For this one, we say we're trying to hire a more diverse staff. We've hired 10 people so far, and they're all men. We've got another 5 in the pipeline, all men, but we were only planning on hiring 20 people overall. How do you handle this situation? What do we do to make sure that we have the best possible staff from skills and diversity standpoint? It's a business problem that they're trying to solve while keeping in mind those social and economic justice aspects.
What does Hosted By mean? Do you actually do the training in the offices of some nonprofit? Do you visit them once for an hour a week? What does Hosted By mean?
The training itself is hosted inside of our Pune, India office. So it gives the new hires a way to get a sense of a ThoughtWorks office and meet people there. In the sense of being hosted by organizations, we do day trips out to meet and learn from the people that are doing fantastic work in the community and find out what it is they're doing, what it is they struggle with, what their hope for the futures are, and where ThoughtWorks can continue to partner with them and support them through both volunteer work as well as technology support and different areas.
I'd be curious to see, as software testers and as technologists, there are other opportunities and other ways that we can get involved, being able to use the skills that we have to help other organizations, NGOs, or other groups that can help make the world a better place, quite frankly. This is really cool. It would be very interesting to get some ideas of who some of these organizations are. For example, they may very well need software testers or programmers or somebody to help them with some infrastructure to be able to meet these needs in various places, and not just in India, but other parts of the world.
Absolutely. I think what I heard there was kind of two spots that are both very, very important. One of them you were talking about, is it our duty to a certain extent to produce things in a reasonable way and support people and society? And I think one of the things that I find interesting there is Emma Keaveney did a talk on dark patterns at European Test Conference last year. It's about how the way that certain websites operate, they actually trick you into spending more money or clicking that button. At what point do we cross the line of getting a click-through rate to actually being not quite proper with the way that we're handling our customers and people on our website? So I found that really interesting.
Yeah, there's an ethical line there. We could almost do a whole show about those ethical lines. That's tough. I just read a thing about a website where a programmer wrote a program to email people after they had opted out. So they made their own email list, and then you opted out, and they just were going to wait 90 days to start emailing you again. That was a feature request. I think the programmer eventually left, which means he, in fact, did the feature request. That's a tough one. But back to ThoughtWorks. You mentioned the section on heuristics and oracles. How long is that? Where did you get your material from that? And can you give me an example of one of those?
We have probably 8 sessions, maybe, that are an hour and a half long and are hands-on but very targeted learning for testers. They range from how to analyze a requirement before it may go into development through to testing with manual and automated techniques. The Oracle and Heuristics one was a way to give new testers some frameworks, just like we all talk about, to be able to get started in a space they may not have a lot of experience in. That 5 weeks is extremely jam-packed. I don't think it's expected that the new hires are experts in that space by the end, but we introduce it week 3, where they've just begun working on their own project with coworkers, and it's for a real client. The trainers kind of play the product owners, but it is based around the idea of a real backlog and a real code base. They can start to leverage those tools like SF Depot, Elizabeth Hendrickson's cheat sheet, how to identify an oracle within their testing on the day-to-day for their product. As a coach there, I would come up and chat with testers as they're working and ask them what they're up to and why they're doing what they're doing, and encourage them to use vocabulary and concrete ideas when they're describing the testing they're doing. There's actually something that you can send back to the client with confidence rather than, I tested some stuff and didn't find anything all that bad, so I think we're ready to go. And that's going to give them confidence to be able to work with clients and with development teams.
Let me see if I understand that correctly. You've actually got them doing testing. Is the development team, which is in the other room down the hallway, doing the development the day before and turning it over, or do you have sort of canned exercises that have already been created?
We absolutely have them doing testing. There's actually a project team with all the new hires. There'll be 8 or 10 developers, a business analyst, and a tester, or something similar to that numbers, depending on who joins us for that group. They get given a backlog that has some stories already completed, some stories that are ready for dev, others that are kind of more in the epic stage and need to be broken down. And then they're given a code base that has a mix of issues in it, as well as some good patterns to follow. What we find is software rarely is a green field. Teaching people how to make a brand new piece of software is great, but teaching them how to work with legacy code, do refactorings, and move a code base forward is really where the power of being software developers comes from. They spend 4 weeks working on that project for anywhere from a half a day to a whole day over those 4 weeks, depending on the other classroom events and things.
I guess you have testers. Is it an integrated classroom? Someone's got to write the code the testers test.
Yep. It's just like a project team. There's a code base that exists before any of the new hires join that we hand over to them and say, now you need to extend it in these certain ways. Here's some stories that you might want to use to extend and produce more features for the company you're working for. As they're producing those features, the testers are sitting right alongside, able to ask questions, test the features once they've been completed. Just like the way we work with our normal clients, a tester will be engaged from analysis during development and beyond into testing.
Right. There's an integrated project room and some of the developers are writing the new feature and the testers are involved in all of it. When you have your specialty sessions, you break them into the 3 different groups. One group goes and talks about testing, or does everybody learn everything?
Yep. So there's about a third of the specialty sessions are for everybody and about 2/3 are going to be more based on your specific role.
Okay.
But then everyone comes back together whenever they're working on the project.
The general ThoughtWorks stuff, general technology stuff, every tester at ThoughtWorks has to have a certain knowledge of how Rails works or whatever, how HTML works. And there's the specialty tester stuff. And then there's actually doing it with deliberate practice. Sounds like the specialty tester stuff is maybe 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours. And would make most sense if you were there for the whole thing. For those of us that are listening in on the internet, people are home rolling their own training programs and testing all the time, or else they don't, and you just sort of get inconsistent results.
Yeah, I think it's just that for everybody who is home rolling their own training programs, it's keeping in mind that it's a growing process for us and should be for everybody. We look at ways to improve it after every single group of new hires that comes through. We spend almost 2 months at the end of every year really looking for the larger changes that we can make to improve for ourselves. Since between groups, we may only have a couple of weeks, and so the changes might be quite small.
Sure.
I wanted to dig deeper into the deliberate practice piece that you mentioned. I know during Abby's Test Bash talk, there was this one piece that Abby and James did, which they call a desk check. Maybe it's just my ignorance out of this, but it really looked like a mini demo that Abby asked for James to do during one of their exercises, where you're kind of challenging the developer to say, hey, can you demo what you're doing to me now? And then maybe we could prove some of the areas and we can test it there and then as well.
I've heard different words used for that. We tend to use desk check at ThoughtWorks, but it's just our way of doing a sanity check and a handover from development process to verification and testing. It gives us a chance to make sure what the product owners and business analysts and people on that side were expecting to be built was actually built in the way they envisioned. It also gives me as a tester a chance to be able to see that the main functionality is working so that if there's anything small that we see as a defect during that desk check, the developers haven't even lost context yet. They can immediately start to make any fixes or changes there. Finally, one thing that didn't really showcase in the talk was I often ask questions about testing that has been done by the developers. What levels of the application did they test? In what ways? The biggest risk they see? How do they mitigate it? So that I can make sure we're looking at testing as a holistic activity rather than as, well, unit tests were being done by the devs, so what do I want to do for UI tests? And that's not the most successful route that we've found with our teams. So we try and discuss that at the desk check as well. The desk checks can occur at the end of a story, as I said, kind of as that handover period. But I've also often had them throughout a story as well. As a developer is starting to get completed with an aspect of their story, maybe they've completed the API, but they haven't yet done the user interface interactions. They may call me over and have a chat about the API so I can start testing that before they start looking at the display aspect and the CSS. It's really just a way of increasing that communication between the different roles.
It's very interesting to me in a way that when a lot of companies or teams start their journey into Agile or DevOps, there's a lot of conversations around backlog grooming and how the three amigos can help that. But the notion of a desk check that actually happens not before the actual work is done, but happens during and maybe close to after the work is done. Mini feedback loops within feature development that does help affirm or just making sure that we're still on the right path in building a given feature.
Absolutely. It's definitely part of that feedback loop. If all you do is talk a lot before you start the feature, how are you going to be confident that the words that were spoken were interpreted the way you expect? This is our way of doubling back on that and making sure we all are on the same page now that we have something physically in front of us to inspect.
Yeah, I use the term desk check. I may mean something slightly different, but when the developer finishes the story, he hasn't even checked it in yet. It's running on his local machine. Come on over. Show me what you're doing. Explain to me what you're thinking. Let's talk about it for 5 minutes, and maybe I can even do some light testing on it. The developer then understands what the tester is doing, how they do their work, and you can find bugs right there that don't have to wait for the developer checks it in, it goes to Jenkins, it gets built, it gets pushed, I get an email notification, I finish what I'm doing, and I start it. So there's like a one-day delay loop there that gets cut out, and I come back and find bugs. Not only that, but the developer understands how I think. So it's possible the next build or the build after that, the check-in after that, entire categories of defects are fixed because the developer knows that I'm going to test for international characters. And for some reason, filing a bug report or even a conversation 2 days later doesn't have the same reinforcing behavior as right at the desk.
We just also bring in the product owners. But other than that, that's exactly what we were doing with our desk checks.
I do much the same. We have a similar environment with our development team. Social Text prides itself on being a bit of a distributed group. We do a lot of our stuff separate. We don't have the ability all the time of being able to just walk over and sit on the person's desk and say, hey, what's going on here? But we do the same thing in our chat channels or sharing screen sessions. It's the same deal. It does come down to the fact that it's one thing to say, hey, we've got a story and go work on it versus just getting in with them and talking with them about, hey, this is how I go about testing, techniques that I use, some of the things that I'm considering. As a point of example, last week we were trying to determine the proper order of operations to make sure that we were getting what we expected and that things were showing up the way they were. And it was really very helpful because that programmer saw, oh, okay, I see why you're thinking that. That's okay in these circumstances, but there's other times that we need to be looking at it this way. And just writing things up on the board and just talking out what we thought was the proper flow for it, we found 5 issues that then we were able to resolve much faster than me sitting there in front of the app and having to load it up and say, well, okay, here's what I'm seeing. Break away from it and talk about what it is you're hoping to accomplish. You can really shorten that feedback loop considerably.
Okay, great. Thanks. We're about out of time, but before we go, where can people learn more about Abby and what she's up to?
I will be speaking at a European testing conference in February. Going to be doing a workshop, so I'm not sure how that'll come across in video, but they do a great job of putting up all the videos from that conference. I'm going to be there with Bhagya going through the distributed team workshop again. And then really excited that Cast X, the one in Sydney, just announced Mark Winteringham and I will be there doing API testing in February as well. So that's going to be an exciting one as well.
Abby is also A_Bankser on Twitter, and we're going to have a link to that in the show notes. Thank you for being on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Anybody else have anything new and exciting?
We're closing out the year. 2016 is coming to an end. I do want to say, though, to everybody who has been listening and commenting and giving us feedback, you're definitely helping. If you really like the show, please give us reviews on iTunes, because the more reviews we get, the more we bubble up in the search and people know that we exist. Keep listening. If you enjoy it, tell a friend. If you really enjoy it, give us a review.
For me, I just want to give a shout out. I just recently found out that there is a vibrant group in the Philippines that primarily looks around the practice of software testing. So this is Software Testing Philippines. They're actually 2,000 strong and they have monthly meetups. So one of their primary facilitators and leaders is actually a volunteer for the Association for Software Testing. And Ian Pastella says, I think has done a really good job in ushering the ideas of testing and helping that particular group. So I just want to give a shout out to Ian Pastelos, Michelle Lagare, as well as Mel Alicando for doing such a great job in keeping that. And it's not every meetup group has 2,000 members. And to keep that in a way where they're consistent with their meetups is a really admirable thing. So guys, keep on doing what you guys are doing. You guys are doing well.
That's awesome. Thanks, Brizzy. Thanks, everybody, for being on the show. We'll be back again in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Thanks, all.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening to The Testing Show, sponsored by Qualitest. For more information, please see www.qualitestgroup.com. Do you have questions? Or is there a topic or an idea you'd like to have covered? Please email us at thetestingshow@qualitestgroup.com, and we will answer questions we receive on air.